Hey, what's up, guys? This is Rudy from Marcello Consultoria. We're about to start a new episode of Chá Pedagógico. I'm just going to invite our good old friend, André Hedlund. André, where are you? André, send to. Here he is. Okay, guys, so how are you guys doing? Hope you're all right. André's already here. We're about to start. A couple of announcements though. So guys, if you haven't checked out the bilingualism course that Andre and I are offering, check the link in our bio and you're going to be redirected to our website, marcelloconsultoria.com.br. And you're going to have a list of courses that we provide here at Marcello Consultoria, and our course is going to be there. And one more thing, guys, if you couldn't watch us live here, go to Spotify, because in a couple of days, we're going to upload the sound of Chá Pedagógico. So Chá Pedagógico is not just a show or a conversation that we have with you guys live here. We also transformed it into a podcast, a Spotify podcast. So take a look. Just find us, Marcello Consultoria Acadêmica, on Spotify, and you'll be able to follow us as a podcast. Okay, so where's André? Here, view. Oh. Here we go. Oh, hello, guys. Mayara, hello, how are you doing? There he is!
Hey! Yeah, I'm here, man. What's up? Hey. There's something wrong with my headphones, I think. I'm just going to take them off, I think. Yeah, I've been trying to, but let's try again.
Seriously, what's wrong with your headphones? Because this is not the first time that you have a problem with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, man. I know, it's the Wi-Fi. But something wrong with the – I think I'm actually in the Bermuda Triangle here, you know? It's like every six – you know, every time, every day at 6 p.m., 7 p.m., all the connections kind of fail, you know, like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, you know, it's like there's an electromagnetic field. I don't know what's going on, man. But like, I can hear you now.
Are you like in the Island of Lost or something?
Yeah, something like that, you know.
Do you see a panda polar bears or something like that?
Well, I did see the smoke, you know. Remember the weird smoke? I do see that sometimes, but yeah. But now all good, man. Good to be back with Chá Pedagógico, yeah.
All right, guys. Yeah, so by the way, we're going to have two episodes. I forgot to tell you guys. We're going to have two episodes of Chá Pedagógico this December, because in November we weren't unable to have an episode. So we're going to have an episode this week, and then... Not the next Saturday, the next Sunday, the week after next Sunday, right?
Yeah, two weeks from now, right?
Two weeks from now, I think so. Right? Two Sundays from now.
And so, we haven't really decided on the topic, right? So maybe you can give us some suggestions. Yeah,
It's going to be a surprise, especially not because we're ready for that, but because we have no idea what we're going to talk about.
Exactly. So if you guys want to recommend something, please do, you know?
Yeah, feel free. But we do know what we're going to talk about this week. And this week, I don't know if you've been participating. Yes. Some of you guys have been participating along the weeks with us. We asked you last week and also this week, which one do you think it's better? Do you think it's better to learn a second language in childhood, or do you guys think that it's better to learn a second language after puberty or when you're adults, for example? And I can say that for those who actively participated, chose that it's better to learn a second language in childhood.
The earlier the better. That's what they said, right?
They said the earlier the better. So for the next hour, for the next 60 minutes-ish, hopefully, right? Because we don't normally talk a lot. But in the next 60 minutes, we'll try to cover this topic. We're going to try to answer the question.
Yep.
Is it right? Is it right to say that the earlier the better when it comes to learning a second language or acquiring a second language?
So highly controversial, you know? Exactly. So Yeah, so one of the things that you mentioned that I just wanted to reinforce, when we both did a poll in our history, right, to check what people thought, and I think we both had very similar results, like 91, more than 90% of the respondents said that the earlier, the better. But is that the case, right? And well, we cannot really talk in detail about a project that we have. But we're going to try to contribute to the scientific debate, let's say. So hopefully if everything turns out okay, you're going to see Hedlund and Mattiello somewhere in an academic journal, talking about this, right?
Either saying good things or bad things, it doesn't matter. You're going to see us somewhere, hopefully in a couple of weeks, maybe years. I'd say weeks, right? I think weeks, right? Hopefully weeks. Hopefully. But the thing is, when it comes to, when we talk about the earlier, the better, the very first thing that comes to everyone's minds is that is the age factor. And again, for starters, this is a highly controversial topic because most of us teachers, language teachers, not just language teachers, but teachers in general, Portuguese teachers, Portuguese, because here in Brazil, Portuguese is the first language, is our native language. Geography teachers, parents, they all say that, oh, my kid has to start learning a second language now because they are going to have better benefits. Teachers say it's better because they are like a blank canvas. And they are going to
Yeah, I
absorb
like
everything
that.
as a sponge. So there's so many arguments for the age
Definitely,
factor.
yeah.
But the thing is, when it comes to wage, we have to think that it's not totally good nor totally bad either. Both factors, I mean, pre-pubertal learners have advantages. Post-pubertal learners also have advantages and disadvantages.
So I'd like to pitch in with something very important. We're talking about language. Language, as I think I've mentioned a couple of times, is probably the most complex of human faculties, right? And language is not just one thing. And when we're talking about acquiring or learning a language, we have to think about the many parts of a language. So if you want to use the CFR, for example, we're talking about speaking, listening, writing, and reading. So we're talking at least about four parts of language. And within those parts, we have syntax, we have phonology, we have morphology, we have so many different areas if you're coming from a linguistic point of view, right? So I think, so when you say that kids can learn language or acquire language faster or better than adults, we have to be careful because what aspect of language is it the entirety of language? I mean, and what about adults? Isn't there anything that adults can do better, considering that language is not just one thing, right? And the literature is very clear on at least a couple of things that we should discuss. For example, we know that kids, they can benefit from more implicit tasks, right? So let's say that so acquiring might be easier for kids because, they still don't have a lot of prior knowledge. They're still going through a period that we call exuberant period. They're making millions of connections, kind of, fine-tuning their brains, and so that's easier for kids. Adults, they might be better. That's what the literature suggests in learning explicitly. So because they have more developed declarative memory, for example. So, very basically, kids cannot learn vocabulary as fast as adults. Just one example. When they are growing up, they're really small kids, they will learn words in a very fast way. But if you give adults lists of words, vocabulary to learn, if they use the right techniques, they are probably going to be much better at that than kids, right? So we have to be careful when we're analyzing how the whole process goes, right?
Let me just go back a little bit in what about what you're saying. Because maybe, I don't know if everyone is familiar with the difference between learning a language and acquiring a language.
Exactly.
There are some distinctions between these two terms. When you acquire a language, you don't necessarily know what you're doing, you know, basically.
Exactly.
So like a parrot acquired a language, the parrot is going to repeat that, but it doesn't necessarily know what it's doing. On the other
My cat
hand,
wants to join us. Sorry, man. My cat is here.
I was really concerned because I was talking about an animal speaking. And then I started I started hearing something and I was like, okay, I think Mr. Trump is speaking.
Yeah, and now it's
that freaked me out. You know? That freaked me out. I was like, Mr. Trump speaking. Yeah. Oh dear.
Well, that's definitely the next step on his evolutionary, you know, development. Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so that's acquiring a language. So a parrot acquired a language because the parrot apparently knows how to reproduce that, even though the parrot has no idea the meaning of that other word. For example, book. A parrot can say book. Yeah. On the other hand, learning is completely different because learning entails meaning, which entails understanding of what you're doing. It's not just mimicking.
Exactly.
So that's the basic difference. Of course, we're not getting into that
Perfect.
Into this episode, maybe future episodes, okay?
Yeah.
But that's basically the difference between acquiring a language and learning a language.
Exactly.
And as Andre, as you were saying, that's true, yes. Lightbound and Spada, they said, kid, and many others, of course, they said that kids learn implicitly, or as they say, naturally. Okay.
Yes.
So they don't need any formal education in order to learn a language. We're not talking about first language, native language, or second language. We're talking about languages, okay?
Language and, in general,
In general. And adults, because of the declarative memory and everything that Andre has just said, they learn better explicitly, meaning that
exactly.
we basically have to tell them, adult learner, this you have to do this because this is going to have the to have consequences, and the consequences that
so exactly
they have to have the feeling of they have to have the feeling that they're actually learning something. They're not going to just
that's why they ask all the time why? does this mean, right?
They
need
like,
to know the concepts
they're like whereas kids kid, they
Yeah, exactly, right? Kids, they just take things, you know, they would just give them, this is how you say this, this is how, you know, or how you use this grammar structure, and kids, they just start using them. And there's also, if you think about fear of exposure, right? Adults, they suffer more, I think, from fear of exposure because it matters more to them if they're going to sound stupid or not in front of their peers, right? Whereas kids, they just use the language. So again, is it really about something in your brain, something in terms of maturational development, or is it more social, right? Something
especially,
that has
especially,
to do with behavior. Yeah,
exactly. Especially because I can say a couple of decades ago, actually more than a couple of decades ago, but several decades ago, the literature said that they established kids outperform adult learners at phonology.
Yep.
And adults outperform kids in vocabulary or in grammar.
That's, exactly.
That was basically the paradigm that we had up until the beginning of the year 2000 or in the beginning of the century.
Yep.
And then maybe a little bit before the beginning of the century, but mainly in the beginning of the century, we also had the shift saying, oh, wait a minute. Kids can also be good at vocabulary and not just grammar.
Yeah.
It's not so common, but vocabulary, yes, they can also be good.
Yeah.
And adults can also outperform kids in phonology. It's not so common either,
exactly.
but it's also possible. So that
it's possible, right?
Even more, I wouldn't say debunked, but that that messed up
it's
more the whole scenario.
Whole, yeah.
Because it was pretty much well established. Okay, so kids are good at this, adults are good at that.
Yeah.
So kids learn
exactly.
implicitly, adults learn explicitly. So everything had their labels. So everything was in order.
Yep.
And then in the beginning of the century, we've had some studies, and
definitely,
this destroyed the whole status quo. And now, so now we can see that
that's true.
age is not actually the main factor when acquiring or learning a second language. You know,
perfect.
It's not necessarily the age.
Yep. And a lot of different concepts kind of, you know, messed up the whole critical period hypothesis, right? Because for a couple of years now, we've been discussing English as a lingua franca, right? So there was this, I would say over, you know, I would say they were actually emphasizing the fact that people should be as close to a native speaker as possible to be considered a native or a proficient speaker, actually. And this has been changing in the last couple of decades, I guess. Maybe not even a decade or so. And so that changes the essence of this debate, because people were interested, if you can speak the language, the second language, additional language, as close as somebody from the United States, for example, a native speaker from the U.S., then you're considered very proficient. But then if you look at all the other skills of that person, they might not outperform an adult on a Michigan or Cambridge test or the TOEFL or whatever. So again, the whole debate normally focuses on one or two aspects of the language, not the whole thing, right? And what you mentioned is very important. So if I don't know, if I learn a second language after the so-called critical period and I learn to proficiency, so I go all the way and then, you know, I get to the C2 level, but I don't sound exactly like an American or a British native speaker, does that mean that I'm not proficient, even if I pass the Cambridge test, you know, or if I got 110 on the TOEFL?
Yeah.
So, and maybe a kid, if you think about a kid who has started very early and then they get to a certain age and they take the TOEFL, they might have a lower score because, you know what, they can speak very well, but I wouldn't say that they can speak very well. They just sound like they can speak very well. Yeah. And then we make a judgment based on how accurate they sound, you know, always compared to two parameters. And normally it's either Americans or British people. And we forget that there are a lot of other natives from different countries, right, who have very different accents. So,
yes, as a matter of fact, there have been several studies. This is in linguistics what we call world Englishes. Because we have English, because that's one of the problems that we've had in the studies of critical period hypothesis, because they were basically taking out some factors and assuming that factor is the most important when it comes, and linking that factor to age and saying this is the most important factor when learning a second language.
Exactly.
It's not exactly like this. It's a combination of factors. And
perfect.
And again, talking about the world Englishes, yes, some decades ago, they were saying the idea of a perfect speaker was, you should sound like an American. You should sound like a British, a person from Britain. Not even Britain, but England. And they forgot that they're Australia. We have English from Australia, from New Zealand, from Ireland, from
Nigeria,
from India,
everywhere,
and now we
South Africa.
We have English from Singapore. So nowadays we have a world of Englishes, and this is this is something that's been very well studied by several linguists, etc.
Perfect.
And this influenced a lot the testing, the proficiency tests, because I don't know if any of you guys that are watching us or hearing us on Spotify, don't forget, this is also going to be on Spotify.
Yeah.
If you are a Cambridge examiner or a Michigan examiner or an IELTS examiner, you probably know that accent, I wouldn't say accent, but pronunciation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, accent. Okay.
Yeah, accent.
It's not a factor when checking the proficiency. The proficiency of the candidate.
Exactly.
It's an even
just like you said,
criteria.
Pronunciation is. Yeah, it's not accent, but pronunciation, because you can pronounce the word correctly, but you know, within your accent, it doesn't mean An American would say ask, whereas a British person would say ask. And, you know, yes. Two different pronunciations.
Schedule and
both
schedule.
Accepted. Exactly, right? So again, I think phonology does not necessarily need to be the focus of, the whole debate on critical period. So I think they're overemphasizing phonology. They want to take kids and adults and compare both of them in terms of how closely they speak to a native speaker. And normally the native speaker is, based on where those linguists came from. So you got Stephen Pinker, Stephen Krashen, Noam Chomsky, they are all American. And for them, being able to speak a language proficiently is to sound more like them in a way,
and,
which kind of, we have to be careful with this analysis, right?
Yeah. And this is a very, this is a dangerous path. Because yes, of course, they had to use something to start. Again, guys, please understand us. We're not criticizing the studies that came before us. We're just telling everyone.
No.
We're just telling you guys that nowadays we are able to expand the view on critical period hypothesis and not just be stuck on either pronunciation, either phonology or
purple.
Hi, Purple. Hello. It's
Purple.
It's,
yeah.
No, it's Nicole, if I'm not wrong. Your name is Nicole.
Nicole, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Hi. So we don't have to be stuck on either phonology or grammar judgment, because this is what other studies have not have done, but they did once they realize, okay, so phonology is one thing. What about
Gabi, by the way?
Gabi. Sorry. I didn't say anything.
Yes. I don't know why, man. It's called the bandwagon effect. It's a cognitive bias, you know? You said it, and I just went after it.
I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything, Gabi. Andres said I didn't say anything. I was quiet.
Yeah, it was my fault.
Hi, Gabi. So then that's what they said. Okay, so let's use grammar, because grammar, they said, okay, grammar is also part of the, this is something very complex, that it's part of the language.
Exactly.
And because the whole idea of the critical period hypothesis is based on first language acquisition. Because on first language acquisition, they say, wait a minute, grammar is something very complex. So if a kid acquires that implicitly, it means that in second language, there's probably going to be any similarities. And they started using some grammar judgment tests. But that is a problem. I think Goyais scored because there were some.
Yeah, you can hear it, right? So you can hear it. Okay, yeah.
It's either Goyais or
probably, I'm very close to the stadium, so yeah.
So grammar judgment is also a big trap when analyzing the critical period hypothesis. Why is that? Because when we speak, of course, we don't necessarily think about the rules.
No.
You know?
It's, and we don't necessarily use the right rules, right?
Not at all. Not at all.
We use a lot of colloquialisms, and we don't really care about grammar, structure, you know. So it doesn't mean that we don't know how to use the language.
Yeah. Exactly. And when we talk about grammar judgments, are those activities in which you have to decide for something like use the verb in the parentheses in the correct tense, like that. So you guys can have an idea what we're talking about. So this is a grammar judgment test. So this is not very, very realistic. And of course, adults are going to outperform kids in this kind of kind of examination, because their memory is better and they understand rules better than kids. So, it's not very well balanced either.
Well, I'd like to kind of, go back in time, talk a little bit about what the scientific literature has so far in terms of discoveries. And then maybe, the people who are watching us can make some comments there. But so if I had to think of any advantage for kids, very early infants, to start a language as soon as possible, that would be phonology, most definitely phonology. So there's very interesting research by Patricia Cole, and so she was able to determine that there is sort of a critical period for phonological acquisition of a language, that ends at the 12th or maybe 10th, 12th month, right, of age. So what happens is if kids are not exposed to certain sounds, phonemes of the language that they're trying to acquire, they're going to have a lot of difficulty pronouncing those things in the future. So what she did, Anyway, what she did, got a bunch of little toddlers, you know, six, seven, 8 monthers, and exposed them to the sounds of Chinese. They were American, so they were exposed to the Chinese language. And if they are exposed to the Chinese language within this period, from the 8th to the 10th month, basically, they're able to recognize those sounds. Whereas us, because we've never been exposed to those sounds as kids, we cannot recognize those sounds. We cannot even hear the difference between sound 1, 2, and 3, for example, which is incredible. So that's pretty cool. And also, if you think about, you know, other characteristics of what we have, we know that there is a very important shift in our life at around 17, 18 years of age, right? Which is normally we're going to college, we're going to work or something like that. So the most current study that we have shows that at around this time, 17, 18, our ability to learn a language starts declining steadily, right? Which means that, and Pinker was involved in the study and was published last year. So, you know, so he says that there was only one paragraph devoted to this as a conclusion in his discussion, you know, like we don't know if any social phenomena might have caused adults or, you know, young adults or at the end of our adolescence to decline, you know, or to lose the ability to learn languages as younger kids. Because that's the time that we start going out to college. And so we don't really have time to focus on language learning, right? But we also have studies showing that adults who are much older than the critical period, you know, cutoff age, basically, like 17, 18, we have studies showing that those, you know, students can learn language to proficiency as well. So that's why it's so controversial. If you start earlier, okay, you might sound more like a native speaker. Mm-hmm. But is that really an advantage? And the problem is, if you don't start earlier because you didn't have time or the opportunity, should people who are selling classes, you know, who have their schools based on this theory, should people keep telling students, no, you're too old to start now? Or should they push? Because I know people who are doing that. You have to enroll your kids as soon as possible because you're going to get that out of the way. Yeah, but you're sending the wrong message. You know, if you look from another angle, you're telling the parents that maybe now that they're too old, they cannot learn. Like, you know, don't do it to your kids. Enroll them now because it's too late for you, buddy. You know, we don't want that message to go around. That's the problem, right?
Yes, exactly. And there's one more thing. It's not only when parents do that, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand when parents do that, okay? Because they're worried about the future of their kids. So, you know, I understand that. So, but the problem is we teachers, we cannot say this. We have to change our mindsets a little bit. Why do we have to change our mindsets a little bit? Because if we have this message, if we, you know, have this flag on our backs, or if we hold this flag up in the sky saying, let's start learning a second language as soon as possible, let's do that. Not only the kids will think that, oh, if I don't do this now in the future, I won't have the same opportunity. But also the adults now, they're going to look at you, English teachers or second language teachers, and they're going to think, so I'm doomed. I'm not going to learn.
Yeah, so because we're experts in the field, right?
Because
so they're going to take our word,
because we're teachers. And the old saying that goes, old dogs don't learn new tricks. That's not true.
Exactly.
That's not true
at all.
And also, Light Dawn and Spada, they also said that because we have to be careful with two things when we're putting the kids to learn in the classroom, to learn a second language as early as possible. Factor number one, we have to be careful with the their performances, because as we were saying, they're going to take a long time to start using the correct grammar, because biologically they're not ready yet. Biologically, they're not there. So we have to be careful. So maybe we have to rethink and analyze again and sit down and discuss this whole craziness of learning a second language in childhood, because as soon as they learn their first language, learning a second language is probably going to be much easier for our kids, because they are going to use that as a background, as a basis for the second language. And this is also going to mean that their brains are going to be matured enough to learn the rules and apply the rules, not just the phonology, but also the rules and the words and the common words, et cetera, et cetera. And the words that are going to transform the syntax and et cetera.
Yeah. And point we have neuroscientific evidence for that I can mention later. Yeah.
You will. Just to finalize this, point number two. Yeah. There is also one more thing. Many schools, guys, I know you've been working for several schools, several bilingual schools or international schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Many schools are, and if you're not teachers, if you're just parents and watching us and listening to us on Spotify, be careful when the school says, we're going to have more classes along the week because this is really dangerous, which means, according to Lightbaum and Spada, I also agree with this. Andre probably agrees with us too.
Yep.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be here. If you disagree, man,
I do.
Don't say this, right? Just disagree later on. But if we do this, if we just extend, like, instead of having 1 hour a week, if we have three classes of an hour and a half, it's not enough. Yeah. Because the maturation of our students' brains respect a process. It's all about a process. So always going to
Piaget talked about that. Yeah.
Exactly. Piaget
the cognitive development comes in different stages, right? And you mentioned something that is so important, man, because it's okay when, you know, bilingual schools, they want to say that, you know what, it's a good thing to start early, sure. But it depends on how you do it. Because I feel like if you are so if you start too early, which we know the only advantage that we know you can get from starting as early as possible, and I'm talking about 6, 7, 8 months old, that's, you know, so that's very early, you will be able to recognize some phonemes in the language, you know, but and of course that will matter in the future for you to sound as closely as possible to a native speaker. That's the only advantage that you have according to the literature. And of course you have cognitive gains as well. So this is going to be good for your mathematical skills. But you also get cognitive gains from starting after. So, you know, I don't think you have to rush your kids to a bilingual school as early as 7 months old or something like that. And there's another problem, like Rodolfo said, how are you going to do that? So what is the process like? Are you going to increase the load, you know, the curriculum, so the number of hours that kids are going to be at school? We understand that there is a reality in Brazil and many countries that parents, they have to work all day and they don't have any other place to leave their kids. And, you know, on the other hand, all the best educational systems in the world, they are doing the opposite. They're cutting back on hours because they realize that kids need to play. Kids, they don't have to be sitting, you know, even though the schools now are much more playful and whatever, kids, they need to play and spend time with their families to develop the social emotional skills and everything. So I am very concerned with this crazy, you know, idea movement, like that people are pushing their kids to school as early as possible, enrolling them in all kinds of courses. And we have an educational system based on grades, numerical grades. So the kids are all the time being tested and evaluated without the presence of their parents, and that's actually a bad thing. So we have to be very careful with the process, right? And yes. Like you said, so the neuroscientific evidence that I have for, you know, why L1 is very important for L2 as well. So there's interference. Like, so if you have a very different language, you might lack some structures in the second language because you're using your L1 as reference, right? But you can compensate that if you study long enough, right? Yeah. What is the neuroscientific evidence? Two very large studies, one from Edna Andrews, Duke University, and the other one, I think, was Università San Raffaele in Italy with Jubin Abutalebi, right? So they saw that the longer you are exposed to L2, so it's not the earlier the better, it's the longer the better, right? The longer you are exposed to L2, the more similar your neural networks in the brain. So you have a neural network for L1, which is, you know, it's going to take big portions of your brain, a lot of activity in the temporal lobe, the left temporal lobe normally. But if you have a very different level of L2, so if you are a very basic, speaker or user of L2, you're going to see very different activations in different areas, right? Still in the temporal lobe, but you're going to see something very distinct. When you are proficient, you're going to see something very similar, which indicates that if you already have the foundation, if you have L1 consolidated in your brain, you're going to take advantage of the same neural networks. And so why start so early, right? If you can still get the same cognitive benefits, if you start a little later, if you start, you know, you're still going to be able to take advantage of reasoning and mathematical skills. You don't have to start as a baby. And, you know, I think kids are studying too much, man. Yeah. spending too many hours at school, you know.
hopefully any principals are watching us now, or they're not going to listen to us on Spotify. Otherwise, they're going to kill us. What? Yes. Wow.
There is a social demand. It's not your fault, you know. There is a social demand. They need to put their kids somewhere, right? Parents have to put their kids somewhere.
And you know what, Andre? This is totally true because we mentioned a couple of minutes ago. Why do I say a couple of minutes ago? No, it wasn't a couple of minutes ago. It was a long time ago. It was basically 20 or 25 minutes ago.
That's another cognitive bias, you know.
Jesus.
It's like we don't really know how to keep track of time. So, everything kind of feels very recent in our brain.
That's not cognitive bias. This is old people talking.
So, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's true.
But the thing is, Birdsong says this in his studies. Liebaum and Spada says this in their studies. Lydia White says this in all her studies. Even Newport and Johnson say the same thing in their studies. Many people say this in their studies, that the quality of exposure is crucial in the process of the acquisition of a second language. This is crucial.
Perfect.
The quality of the exposure, the length of the exposure. Everything started with age of arrival. What is age of arrival? Well, age of arrival is basically the same thing as the moment a person started studying English. Period, you know,
exactly
to support the critical period hypothesis. Then they realize that, wait a minute, it's not the age that a person is the age arrived at a country, or the age that a person actually started studying a second language, but in fact, the length of residence, LOR, or age of exposure, which is also, actually, age of arrival got evolved to age of exposure, and then age of exposure got some. Broke down into several other categories, and one of the categories is length of residence, and also this quality is all about exposure, and this exposure is very important and crucial for the acquisition process. Why is that?
Yeah,
because mainly what you said, you know, this is what you said. Let's put our kids starting English at K-5, K-4. Or something like that.
Yep.
Great. But what if the quality is not good? And when I say quality, exactly. I'm not talking about the accent exactly. of the teachers, okay, guys? I'm not talking yeah. about accent. I'm talking about range. Yeah. I'm talking about lexical choice. I'm talking about
exactly.
Coherence, cohesion
yep.
in the speech. I'm talking about
perfect, it, perfect.
All the rubrics that involve that are involved in a proficiency test, for example. In the ECPE,
yep.
IELTS, et cetera, yep. et cetera. So these yep. are some of the rubrics that they yep. use to check whether the person is proficient or not. So this is crucial.
Exactly.
This is quality of exposure. And there's one more thing.
Yep.
I know several cases of friends of mine that got into an immersion program, and they came back to Brazil with the same English as they had when they got to the U.S. or whatever they went.
Yeah.
Why is
because
that? Because of the quality.
Low quality. Yeah.
Because
exactly.
of the quality. So, oh, there
low
was a
quality, low length, you know.
Exactly.
You think of time of exposure is also very important,
They're
right?
They're all connected. They're all connected.
Yeah.
So, basically, yeah. it's not age. But we have yeah. to remember something. If a person starts yeah. Being exposure to a second language at age 8, continuously, yeah. you know, uninterruptedly, yeah. until yeah. age 28, this person is going to have an end state. End state is the same as ultimate attainment or end yeah. result. Okay.
Perfect. Perfect.
This
yeah.
person is going to have an end state way higher with higher marks than a person that started yeah. at age 20 and it's at yeah. age 28 now, you know. So we can,
yeah,
if we compare
length of
both
exposure,
people
right?
today.
Yeah.
Because of length yep. of exposure. And again, I'm talking
yep.
about good
and
quality.
And quality. Yep.
With good quality, yep. okay? Because if a person yeah. is exposed to the language at age 8 until age 28 uninterruptedly, but with very yep. low quality, the person yep. that started at age 20 and now it's at age 28, this person, there's a big chance yep. that this person is going to outperform person number one or subject number one.
Exactly.
Okay?
And,
so
and
it's
take a
all
look at
about
Gabi.
Exposure.
Yeah. Like Gabi wow. says, she's a late speaker, and I think it's that it helps to be exposed to a new language as soon as possible. It depends, but I agree with you guys. Kids need to be playing. They will learn by playing. But I'll give you a very practical example, something that Rudy was talking about. Let's get an average American citizen from whatever, you know, Kentucky, or I don't want to be, you know,
Nashville.
I don't want to discriminate anyone. Yeah, Nashville, or could be New York. It doesn't matter. Let's take an average citizen from that country, and let's take you, Gabi, because I know you have a CPE. I know you've paid your dues, you've done everything, and then let's compare your range with that person's range, okay? Or let's take Rudy or myself. And we're all going to take the TOEFL together, and we're going to get a bunch of average Joes from the United States, and they're going to take the TOEFL with us. You know, I don't want to sound cocky here, but I think we're going to outperform them because quality of exposure, range, and we teach the language, right? So if you take, I don't know, some person who has a very particular type of profession, they don't really have to work with language at a certain range because, you know what, I don't know. Maybe they do something that they work in a storage facility and they don't have to write essays or academic papers or whatever, you know. We are going to outperform those people. Even Gabi, who started late, you know, I can tell you that because we are constantly improving our language skills. Whereas those people, they don't have the need to do it. Now, maybe they're going to outperform us on the speaking part. Maybe they're going to get a full grade, but maybe not. Maybe they're going to say a bunch of mumbo jumbo. Yeah, maybe not. You know, I'm just saying.
That,
yeah,
this is something yeah. that we say in our bilingualism course. Because
exactly,
this is what Eva Dobrovskaya studies, and Eva Dobrovskaya
yeah.
is part of one of the
exactly.
References that we use in our course, and
yeah.
that's what she said. People who don't, one of her studies is basically using academics,
yep.
native speakers, okay, but they
yeah.
work in colleges, they are academics, and they compare
yep.
non-native speakers with the same range of education, the same level of education, sorry. And it's, you know, the difference is not that high because of the level of education. But on the on the other hand, when they compare non-native speakers with high level of education and native speakers with not the same level of education, several non-native speakers outperform them in English.
Yes,
which is
exactly
a same language, you know. And let me just go back because Professor Dani.
Yeah,
she said
a lot of comments here. Yeah,
yeah, she said one of the things that caught my attention was the method that we're going to use with adults. This is crucial, okay, Dani. What she said is, you know, you hit the bullseye here because that's the whole point. Kids learn, as we said in the beginning, implicitly, naturally, and adults, they learn explicitly. So we have to know this in order to organize better or lesson plans. And when we're designing lesson plans for adults or post-pubertal learners, let's not just say adults, because if you consider a person that is 16, 17, they're not adults. They're
young adults, but
you know, young adults. So post-pubertal learners, we have to take this into consideration. We have to know this and
most
remember
definitely,
this. And, oh, wait a minute. So my lesson plan is going to be a little bit different, you know, in order to extract the best of our students. Because they are going to, they are able to learn, you know. We have to. This has to be a mantra for ourselves. They can learn. Their post-pubertal learners can learn. Otherwise, they wouldn't be called learners.
We have to start promoting this message all over. We have to start talking. We have to make sure that people who are, you know, capitalizing on the idea that only kids or very very young learners, they are going to be the best learners. Okay, maybe they are going to be the best learners because you know what? They're going to start early. They're going to get it out of their ways, you know, and then they can focus on whatever. That's how I see it. If you start very early, it's kind of like trying to tackle your most difficult problem for the day early in the morning. Stay on it till you get it solved, right? Adults, they're coming to tackle that problem at night. They are tired. They have to pay their bills. They have to pay attention to whatever their kids are doing and cook and whatever. It's harder, yes, but it's not impossible. And we cannot send that message that it's much harder, that it's impossible. We have to send this message, the longer, the better. So if you start studying, if you enroll yourself in a course, any course, you know, hopefully a good course, just go all the way, you know.
Yeah.
So start from A1, get to C2. And
be
then
patient.
When you get to C2, do the TOEFL, do the Cambridge test, you know, and you will have the grade that, you know, could be even higher than a native speaker.
For sure.
An average native speaker, you know, because that's how it works.
Yes. And even, you know what, this is also something that's been a misunderstanding when it comes to SLA. We're not, our end state, the end result, is not going to be natives. We're going to be native-like. There's a big difference. Semantically speaking, natives, native-like. And when they say native-like, this means our performances are so good, are so proficient, that you guys sound as if you were basically born there. Basically born there. They're not saying, no, your accent is... Again, guys, forget about accent. Accent is not crucial here.
Focus on crucial pronunciation.
Here. You know, pronunciation.
Forget about accents. Pronunciation.
Different. You know, yes. Accent involves identity. It involves... Mostly social things, you know, and when it comes to pronunciation, it's not necessarily social. There's of course social things involved, but
Fernando Guarani, born or raised,
born.
Yeah, thank you for joining us, Fernando. Yeah, yeah, born in the country, like you know,
born.
Yeah, born and raised as a native, right?
But going back, this is a great cue for us, Fernando. This is a great cue for what I was saying. Because Yeah. We don't have to be born there. We can be raised.
Exactly.
And yeah. have the same entertainment as a native life.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. We also have to be careful with the rubrics. Because, again, I'm going to use one of the studies by Lydia White. In one of her studies, she uses a Turkish woman. She had her exposure to language after puberty in Turkey.
Yep.
It wasn't the best exposure, but she got her exposure after puberty.
Yep.
And then she, after this some time, she went to the U.S. for college. And also, before that, she took an exam. And she got considered, she was considered proficient. She was considered proficient.
Okay.
Proficient, huh? And then she moved to America. Yep. She went to college. She's been living there. But every time she has to use a determiner or an article, whether definite or indefinite article, she also has the influence of Turkish. Why? Because in Turkish, in the Turkish language, they don't have articles. They use, and for indefinite articles, they use numerals.
They use numerals, right? Yep. Cardinal numerals, like one, yep.
Yes. So instead of saying, oh, there's a lawyer, there's one lawyer, she's going to say. And there are some instances of her study in which this woman, this subject, doesn't even use an article, you know? So there's lawyer. She's proficient.
Yeah.
She was considered proficient. She's,
exactly.
You know, so we have to be careful. We do have to be careful, especially because there are many, many instances in which we're going to maybe think, oh, this person is not learning because he or she is an adult. No, it's because of the interference of our first language. It doesn't have anything to do with age.
And I think we need to change the concept of proficiency in a way. I think we have to look at language in a much more comprehensive way, because we're talking, again, we're looking at the literature that has established that you are proficient if you, I don't know, if you can select from a multiple choice test the best answers for the grammar question that they have there, and if you can, you know, select the best words to fill in the gaps or whatever. This is not language. This is one aspect of language. And like I said, again, if we took the TOEFL, us versus American, you know, like average citizens from the United States or even from the UK or from South Africa, I'm pretty sure because we are teachers that we would outperform them, okay? Not necessarily everyone, because, you know, some people are really smart and they really read a lot and, you know, they might be academics and, you know, but we would probably outperform most people, most average citizens from any country, because we work with the language. And what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter when we started. It matters that we continued and we never stopped. It's about length of exposure and quality of exposure and trying to improve yourself in the area of, you know, teaching English, linguistics, and language proficiency, right? It's not about, you know, it's not about I started when I was 7 or, you know, somebody started when they were 10. It's about how long we stuck with the language, how long we did professional development, how long we taught the language, how long we learned the language, basically, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so, and to wrap things up here, because we have 5 more minutes. Yeah.
Exactly.
The final question, or the big question. The earlier, the better. Yeah. No, as you said, Andre, the longer, the better.
The longer, the better. Yes.
We've been talking for the last 60 minutes, and we went through the age, and we realized that age is not an important factor here. We do have differences in both pre-pubertal and post-pubertal learners. They also have advantages and disadvantages. And then we moved on to the tests. We talked about the rubrics. We talked about the criteria that were used in order to realize if there's a critical period hypothesis or not. And we ended up...
The limitations of the test, right?
And we
because it doesn't really consider all the aspects of language, right?
Yes, we ended up realizing that we don't consider all aspects regarding languages. And we also... standardized testing. Yes.
Cool.
We're just going to wrap things up because this is basically what we've been talking for the last 60 minutes. Okay,
cool.
Guys.
Perfect.
Okay, Fernando. Maybe
that should be the topic of our next Shop Pedagogico.
We talked a little bit. This has been one of the subcategories of this conversation. Fernando, please talk to us if you don't want to wait for the IGTV. Talk to us. It's going to be a pleasure to talk to you afterwards. But if you want to watch us, please watch us afterwards, IGTV, or along the week on Spotify.
I'll give my 2 cents. My 2 cents very quickly. I think if you're just looking at standardized tests, multiple choice, select the best alternative, and you're not considering, for example, a written essay, then you're missing out on a lot. I mean, you cannot really claim that a person who successfully did a standardized test without really writing and speaking. So, you cannot consider that person proficient. You can consider that person proficient in grammar and vocabulary and range and, maybe. But again, there's always the chance that the 1% chance that somebody just got everything right by guessing, So it's statistically speaking, it's very hard, but it might happen as well. How they can write, how they can speak, right?
Yeah. Yes, and that's why standardized tests they have a combination of a speaking test, a grammar judgment test. Yep. Some of them have closed tests, etc. So they combine all these things in order to check whether a person is proficient or not. I agree with you, Andre.
Perfect.
Especially me as a linguist, because my corpora is based on real speech. So, I really like real stuff. And we know that's not just, that's not totally real. It doesn't mean that's totally real.
Yeah.
But going
back.
And then we went to the quality of exposure, not length of exposure, but quality of exposure.
Yep.
And we came up with the idea that the quality of exposure is crucial to the end result or the ultimate attainment of our students. This is really important. So the earlier
We have a couple of seconds.
I don't think
The longer the better. And of course, the longer the better, depending on quality of exposure, length of exposure, and stop telling adults that they cannot learn, that they missed the opportunity. Tell them that they can, That's it.
Yeah. So, guys, again, I think we also have one more minute because I started a little bit earlier. I didn't start at six. So, guys, thank you so much.
Yeah.
If you cut us in the middle, this is going to be available on our IGTV in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And also on Spotify. Just type Machiello Consultoria Academica on Spotify. And we're turning every episode of Shop Pedagogico. Please be patient because it's really hard for us to do that. We're learning how to do this. But
we're not digital natives, right?
Yes.
We can still learn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That means that, yes, we're still learning.
So
check out on us on Spotify if you want to follow us. If you missed some episode of Shop Pedagogico, they're gonna be there little by little. We're going to upload them to Spotify.
Perfect.
Fernando, Gabi. Yeah.
Eliseu,
Drica,
everybody,
Drica, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you had a great time with us. And don't forget that in 2 weeks from now, we're going to have the last episode of Shop Pedagogico of 2019.
Yes. Exactly. And, check our websites. I have a very cool blog post about the critical period hypothesis, EDC Rocks. Go to Machiello Consultoria. Rudy has a lot of blog posts as well. Thank you for joining us. Have a great Sunday and see you in a couple of weeks, right?
See you in a couple of weeks, Andre. Thanks, brother.
Thank you, Rudy. See you, man.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.